Hi, folks, and thanks for listening to this Reboot Republic podcast. Quick few things before we kick off. Just to let you know, this week we've been exceptionally busy already on the Tortoise Shack. I know it's only Tuesday, but we've already published one of those Tony and Martin Forever Behind a Paywall podcasts just for our Tortoise Shack members. We've also got a cracking breakdown of what's happened in Spanish politics over the last 5 days with Madrid-based journalist Owen Gilmartin. We have a brand new Reboot Republic by Professor John Sweeney on all things climate action and climate change, on what has happened or hasn't happened since this government took office. All of those podcasts are available right now alongside over 1,500 of our entire back catalogue, entirely plea-free. So while you're listening, please click the link, come on board, join us on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It is the only way we can keep this show on the road. Finally, I want to draw your attention to Keenan Brennan published a piece in the Irish Examiner in relation to the Ompus scandal that we broke on the 19th of April. Thanks for Keenan for his continuous coverage of bogus self-employment. Do check it out. And of course, you can listen to the podcast now on our Echo Chamber feed. The paywall has been lifted there. That's enough for me. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn. And delighted to be joined the podcast today by Ethel Buckley, who is the Deputy General Secretary for SIPTU in Ireland, and Maeve Richardson of the Irish Secondary School Students Union, to talk about respect at work, a new campaign on trade unions, the importance of trade unions in Ireland today and internationally. And there's a number of events. We'll talk about what's going on in Wicklow at the moment, from Palestine to the housing crisis and the importance of unions and why they matter and what they can do. Maeve, Ethel, I'm delighted to have you on Reboot today.
Thanks. We're delighted to be here.
Maeve, I might go to you first, just in terms of being, you know, a young person and the idea that, you know, has been, not the idea, the reality is unions have been, you know, decimated under 40 years of, you know, specifically targeted policies under neoliberalism, because unions were the bulwark that achieved so much in the period of, from the late 19th century until, and obviously still to today, but under that period of Keynesianism where they achieved so much in terms of and were part of movements that created the welfare state, that created decent conditions at work, but have really been attacked. And as we've seen, the rise in inequality directly resulting from that, and all the research shows that one of the biggest factors in the rise of the billionaire class globally and the rise of inequality related globally is directly linked to the crushing of many unions. And people of history will, and of our vintage will remember, if not in memory, in folk memory, the famous attacks on miners in England and the strikers, the air traffic strikers in the US by Reagan and Thatcher, as one of the key moments in kind of that seeing neoliberalism's victory. And now we reach a point where we're seeing unions return in many kind of areas unorganized. But also, there is, what is the view amongst young people of trade unions? Because there is a sense there's something for older people. What give us your perspective.
The perspective I've seen, my background has largely been student unions, as well as being, you know, a part-time retail worker or customer service worker throughout my education. And the kind of view of trade unions is that there's something we're kind of not being educated on and something that's not quite being shown to us by the education system. And it's something we kind of have to seek out in a way. It's not something that comes up in the curriculum. Working with secondary school students, we've done focus groups on this, and they've largely said it's a definition they learn in business studies or maybe home ec, or even in history, there's kind of a narrative of, oh, well, we needed unions in the past to, you know, have huge gains around young people being able to stay in education longer, housing, weekends, the 40-hour working week. But the fight is over now. Everything's all grand. It's all fine. But as we know from looking at Ireland currently, that's far from reality. So young people are starting to see trade unions as the way to improve our country. You know, I'm watching so many of my peers go off and explore the world because they're looking for work that pays, and that's not the reality of us here in Ireland. People going off to Australia or London for a couple of years hoping that they can come back with a bit of extra money in their pocket so they can actually live here and secure their futures. So for young people, they are definitely starting to see the benefits of people coming together, and that's the only way we've ever changed things in this country, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's very, very positive to hear that. And your research showed that a large majority of young people were positively disposed towards trade unions.
Yeah. You know, when you look at the history of Ireland and how things have improved, it's quite obvious that trade unions are the way of people coming together. You know, in a way, the social contract has been broken. When workers aren't standing together, we're getting poverty wages, we're not getting the benefits at work, we're not being educated on our rights. And lots of people are seeing that being in a trade union and having people stand together with is really the way forward. And for a lot of young people, they're seeing that, you know, they're in a students' union when they're in college pretty much automatically. And that that is important for their fight as students, you know, fighting against rising accommodation prices, looking for better conditions on campuses, coming together for social issues. And they're starting to see that that is translating into workplace as well, that if you want to fight for better, not only for yourself in your workplace, but also for the wider social situation in Ireland, the way that can be achieved is by coming together in your union.
Absolutely, absolutely. And just lastly, before I go to Ethel, were you surprised at that figure that came out from the National Youth Council that it said a half of young people 18 to 29 had low mental well-being? And you know, to me, it was, I suppose it wasn't surprising, but it was so stark that that level of sense of, you know, anxiety, depression around, you know, directly related to social issues, housing, you know, climate, lack of a future. But I think broadly as well, and get your view on it, neoliberalism being this individualization, marketization of everything, this kind of, you know, Ireland is a society where it's not about coming together. You know, we say we support community, we say, but actually so much of our lives have been commodified and neoliberalized. How, what do you think about that connection between that figure, stark figure, about so many young people not feeling, but like little, you know, having, you know, mental ill health and high levels of unhappiness and anxiety being related to the type of society we've created.
I do say that figure didn't really shock me at all. I'm working with previously young people in third level and young people in second level currently. And any conversation with a young person will need to that kind of understanding. We've, as a society, we've kind of stopped investing in the public good in a way. Third spaces that we don't have to pay to have access to, like libraries that are open late, or public spaces such as parks, playgrounds, things that are for everyone to have. And the way Ireland has been politically has been moving away from that further and further. There's sort of been this attitude that's developed over the years of, if I want to get ahead, I have to fight for myself and myself alone. If I want to have that better education, I have to get the money together and go to a grind school and get ahead, rather than thinking, let's try and make our public school system better so that everyone is receiving a high quality education. And what's really is the stark thing is that, you know, we're looking at the generations ahead of us who had secure housing, who had secure access to healthcare somewhat, or access to education that didn't put people in debt. But that's somewhat been eradicated as we've moved towards this individualistic system, this system of paying for the most basic public services. So it's quite a turning point for us as young people that we need to kind of come together, fight for a better funded education system, fight for a better funded healthcare system, and fight so that we can have the things that make us feel secure in society, such as well-paying jobs and housing, housing definitely being the biggest.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Maeve. I really appreciate that insight. And it's, you know, it's so good to hear so eloquently and clearly put by, you know, someone who's supporting, you know, trade unions and student unions. And so really look forward to hearing more shortly. Ethel, just in terms of, I suppose, in some respects, following on from that question, like the social contract, as the Youth Council has been described, has been broken for younger generations in this country. Firstly, would you agree with that? that? And secondly, what role do you think trade unions have in fixing that social contract or remaking it?
Yeah, well, I agree with Maeve's analysis around the social contract being broken for young people. And I suppose one of the things I might just pick up on there is, and it goes back to your opening about a decline in unions, there's this really significant study from UCD, very recent study, and a big survey as well, surveying the attitudes of people in Ireland to trade unions. And somewhat surprisingly, but very welcome for the trade union movement, was the result amongst young people. So the demographic in Ireland most likely to join a union or want a union in their workplace is very young people. So people between the age of 16 and 24, when asked, 66% of them said that they would vote for a union in their workplace tomorrow if they had that opportunity. So I suppose the reason why I say that is I think that increasingly young people are looking to the trade union movement to address income inequality, low pay, their lives becoming more precarious with precarious work, but also incredibly precarious housing situation in Ireland. And really making that link, which you did in the opening, Rory, which is around the very well established link between high levels of unionisation and collective bargaining and union influence in an economy and a labour market. So where that is high, where that is strong, lower levels of income disparity, lower levels of income inequality. And I suppose the labour market that the young people that Maeve represents, the labour market that they are now entering into, is just it's just completely rigged against workers in Ireland, rigged against working people. And I mean, it's really Ireland, the Republic of Ireland in particular, is a playground for big business. It is in SIPTU, in my union, we refer to it as the low pay republic. 1 in 5 workers in Ireland is categorized as low paid, and an increasing number of workers are working on really precarious temporary and part-time contracts, including, for example, in academia. So, you know, back in the day, if somebody was entering into that line of work, it was pretty secure, well-paid work. That's not the case at all now. And not just in Ireland, but around the world. So right across different levels of the labour market, people are finding that those levels of precarity. And I think increasingly people are looking again to the trade union movement as a solution to the workplace element of that, but also to the social element, be that around housing or other public services. Like in Ireland, obviously, Maeve has spoken about education. Education at all levels is underfunded in Ireland. So is our health service. I suppose the slogan of the union that I'm a member of is fairness at work, as you would expect, but also justice in society. And I do think that increasingly workers here, workers in other countries, are saying, you know what, we need to get back into unions and unionise our workplaces. And really, that's what this campaign, Respect at Work, that we're going to talk about is all about.
Yeah. No, very, very interesting. A quick question, maybe, Ethel, you could give us the figures on. I know there's a very high rate of union membership in the public sector in Ireland, but what is the rate in the private sector? It's quite low, isn't it?
It is. So I think at this stage in the private sector in the Republic of Ireland, it is less than one in five workers, so less than 20%. And then, so yeah. that's union membership. That varies according to different sectors of the private sector, Rory. Mm. So like there are some yeah. sectors that have particularly low union density. For example, hospitality has very, very low levels of union density. Service work, you know, services industries, which young people are very likely to work in, very low levels of unionization. There's another measure then.
Finance, tech.
Oh, yeah, finance, tech. I mean, it would be faster and easier to talk about the sectors where there's higher levels of unionization in the private in the private sector. And yeah. and. Now, interestingly, I think there's a bit of a misunderstanding sometimes about this. Sometimes it's perceived that the FDI, you know, the foreign direct investment sector or the international multinational sector in Ireland is fully non-union. Now, that's not at all the case. So in SIPTU, for example, we are have collective bargaining rights and are recognised in tech. Say, for example, in Apple in Cork, fully unionized plant, or in food and drinks production, very decent levels of unionization in the production and research and development of pharmaceutical drugs, medical devices. So those kind of more high-end unionized jobs are staying union. And it's really in services. And as you say, new industries like fintech, technology generally, gaming, that we're seeing very, very low levels of unionization.
And is there all... Sorry, yeah. I was going to a specific one because we had mentioned when we were talking before about the union busting as well going on, or that pressuring on people not to be part of unions. Is there sectors where that's particularly strong or happening?
Okay, so union busting is absolutely rampant in Ireland every day of the week in workplaces in every county on the island. And you know what? It's a bit of a dirty secret, isn't it? The media does not highlight the issue of union busting.
No, we would very much think of it as an American kind of term, an American phenomenon.
Okay. I'd love to spend a bit of time kind of interrogating what you've just said there, because I think you're right about that. And I regularly say to people that there's a perception that America is, America or Colombia or China, that these are locations of union busting and that it doesn't happen here. Now, I have to say to you, the first thing is that it is far easier to form a union and have your union recognized in the United States of America than it is in the Republic of Ireland. So what we're seeing with the United Auto Workers, for example, unionizing Volkswagen in the South in America, or what we have seen with, you know, Amazon workers led by Chris Smalls, or we're seeing the unionization of Starbucks in the United States of America. That would be next to impossible in the Republic of Ireland currently, I would say, because in the United States of America, indeed in the United Kingdom and in most European countries, there is there's a legal process where if workers decide that they want to form a union in the workplace and they want to negotiate together their wages and their terms and conditions, that there's a process for achieving that. And generally the process is around a certain number, like a majority of workers saying, yep, I want the union. That's the process in the United States. There's a voting process. And if the majority vote for the union, then the workers can be represented by that union. Currently, the situation in the Republic of Ireland is that people, workers, have a constitutional right to join a union. That's the right of freedom of association protected in the Constitution. And workers have a right to seek to have that union recognised for the purpose of collective bargaining. However, what's unique about Ireland is those workers' employer has a legal right to refuse to recognise their union for collective bargaining, even if the majority, even if 100% of workers have joined the union and have asked for the union to be recognised. So the difference between the Republic of Ireland and most other Western countries, OECD countries, is that ultimately it is in the gift of employers in Ireland as to whether their employees have their union recognised and have the right to engage in collective bargaining. And in trade union circles, we call that the employer veto. Employers here can completely veto the recognising of unions. And it is, that is the most profound union busting, that workers can want to be in a union, are in a union, and want to be represented by the union, but the employer refuses. But there are other very insidious forms, Rory, of union busting that happens all of the time. So what we see regularly across unions, it's not just my unions, across other unions, that's why we've come together to form this campaign, is that the people who employers identify as ringleaders or as the person leading the drive to unionise, that the employers victimise and discriminate against that person. And there is no law currently in the Republic of Ireland that protects a worker from victimization or discrimination for trade union activity. The other thing that employers do and that workers face, and this has happened in my union, it's happened in Mandate Trade Union, the Communication Workers Union, the Financial Services Union, and lots of other unions. And that is that worker leaders are sacked for union activity. That is absolutely rampant in Ireland. And again, we don't have the kind of protections that people have in other countries. In fact, there's a recent study from the European Trade Union Confederation that shows that only Ireland and Cyprus across the entire European Union don't have protections against dismissal of union shop stewards. So the Respect at Work campaign, our intention is to shine a light on this union busting. We're really grateful to you for the opportunity of this chance to discuss it. But we intend now to shine a light very in mainstream media as well on the issue of union busting, because I think there's very little understanding of it or recognition that it happens outside of the trade union movement. And indeed, recently, there was a joint Oireachtas committee hearing on the issue of union recognition and the right to organise a union. And one of the employer representative bodies was at that hearing, and they said that there wasn't an issue with union busting in Ireland. So it really is incumbent upon unions now to say, okay, we're going to prove to the Irish people and to politics and legislators that this is an issue and it has to be grasped and it has to be dealt with, so that if workers in Ireland want to form a union, they have a level playing pitch upon which to do so, just like workers in America have, or workers in the UK have, or in other countries.
Very good. Well, listen, Ethel, that's really clearly explained. And again, I think, you know, listeners, I'm sure, are experiencing it, some of them, and some of them might be surprised to hear it. But I think it's something, Maeve, as well, that you've been nodding along with. What in terms of your experience of that, and what's your views?
I think for young people in Ireland, one of the kind of things they would have seen maybe on the television growing up was The Simpsons, where we saw Homer Simpson was a union man in a nuclear plant. And there's a very specific episode that comes to mind where Homer somehow ends up being the union leader and negotiator. And the kind of union busting we're shown in that episode is him being kidnapped in a helicopter and brought back to the boss's mansion, Mr. Burns, and kind of grilled that way.
I remember that one,
That's, I think part of it is that when we hear union busting, we very much expect that, or to be, you know, directly locked out of our workplace and told, no, you're not coming in. While it sometimes the start of it, if you're identified as that ringleader, as that person in the workplace, it can start off being a lot more discreet. It's your hours being cut. It's being rostered different times, separated from the people they perceive to be your allies, before it goes towards being sacked. But they've kind of created a number of circumstances where, instead of pointing to you in activity, they can say, well, you've been doing less hours, you've been underperforming, your performance improvement plan says that you've been doing terribly. But this all started as you being a union leader and then creating the climate for you to be sacked. You know, particularly in the retail sector, you hear it a lot, you know, profit is coming first rather than workers looking for decent jobs and decent hours. That's kind of what we're seeing. But people expect union busting to be really obvious like that. Like, my boss is going to shove me in a van and drive me away, instead of those kind of more discreet kind of underground kind of moves towards a young worker.
Yeah.
So it can be quite anxiety inducing to be that person in the workplace trying to stand up and speak out. I know myself, I've worked in the kind of NGO charity sector for a long time, and there's kind of a layer of guilt put upon you of, well, what if us looking for better paying conditions, you know, affects the charity and the charity's goals and pursuits? It's like, I think it would affect the charity's goals and pursuits a lot more if all of us leave with all of our institutional knowledge instead of us just being paid properly and actually wanting to be here and to do as best work as possible. Yeah. That's the thing. A lot of workers want to, you know, stay where they are. The reason they want to be in a union is to make their workplace better, because a lot of time they care deeply about the work they're doing. But we're kind of being shoved into a culture of switching jobs every year to look for a pay increase, when a lot of us could be happier coming together and fighting for better paying conditions in our workplace, rather than this constant moving around.
Absolutely.
But the only way we can improve our workplaces in the eyes of a lot of people is to come together in your union and create a better environment in your workplace.
Yeah, I just wanted to come back in on and to add to what Maeve is saying, that and what we're seeing increasingly as well in the Irish labour market, and in other countries, workers are protected from this. Say, for example, in the UK, they're protected from this. But we're seeing more and more, and workers show these to me all the time, employment contracts, where somebody signs the employment contract. You know, you get a job offer, you're delighted to get the job. If it seems to pay well in that. But we're increasingly seeing clauses in employment contracts that are privacy clauses, which specifically state that workers cannot discuss their pay or working conditions with colleagues or a third party. Now, the reason why people join unions, some people join unions for protection in case they get into difficulty, they get into trouble. That's wise. But most people join unions to come together with their colleagues so that they can tip the balance of power in their favour, because the relationship between an employer and an individual worker is very imbalanced in favour of the employer offering the contract. So what unions offer is collectivising and entering into a collective response to setting the rates of pay or setting the working conditions or the working hours or dealing with things like health and safety or discrimination, equality issues. Now, increasingly, that is illegal for workers to do, because their contracts specifically say that they cannot discuss those issues with their colleagues. And you had, at the start of the podcast, you had raised the issue of mental health and mental well-being, Rory. And I had the opportunity about 2 years ago to meet with some members of the European Parliament. And we wanted to discuss with them a directive that was making its way through Parliament about trade unions and the right to organise. And we brought a group of shop stewards who work in employments where the union isn't recognised to meet the MEPs. And the most profound thing, really, that was said to the MEPs was the incredibly isolating impact of privacy clauses in employment contracts, particularly in employments. And there will be loads of people, I would imagine, listening to your podcast, who work in employments and jobs where their pay is set by individual performance review. So their manager has full discretion, really, to decide whether or not they get a pay increase, and then the amount of the pay increase if they are getting one. And also full discretion, full managerial discretion to set what are the targets or the key performance indicators for that job that would be required. And very often in non-union workplaces, there's really no appeal system of any substance. You get what you get. That's your performance review for the year, and you are contractually debarred from discussing it with anybody else. That is incredibly isolating for people. But what the shop stewards explained to the MEPs as well is that it brings an insidious culture into workplaces where people are competing against each other for managerial favour, and where people are, it can lead to paranoia around whether or not somebody is going to get their pay increase if they do or don't do certain amounts of work. And one of the shop stewards that lobbied, a very significant MEP on that directive, described to her a large, large manufacturing facility in her constituency in the west of Ireland, and the impact on his shift. They make very advanced medical devices, very skilled people, graduates, expecting great jobs when they came out of college, but they can't talk to each other about their jobs or their pay. And when he described to the MEPs in that constituency, the Midlands Northwest constituency, the impact of not being able to talk to your colleagues about your job, how much you're paid, how much they're paid, what is their contract, that really impacts people to the point of depression, and even worse than depression was described to those
really,
politicians.
Really interesting, and it shows, as you know, that impact on, you know, mental health of, you know, how our workplaces are structured, how they're organised, and again, the importance of unions. Just briefly before I go back to Maeve, Ethel, that directive itself, actually is an important directive coming from the EU that needs to be implemented properly around collective bargaining in Ireland, to bring in proper collective bargaining.
Yeah, well, nothing's going to bore your listeners more than talking about an EU directive, so I'm going to fly through this.
We'll put you at 2.5 speed for this one, Ethel.
I'm begging the listeners now, don't go off and make your tea now. Just stick with this for a second. Yeah, it's an EU directive that has to be transposed in member states by November of this year, 2024. So member states where there's very low levels of collective bargaining, including Ireland has to transpose it. And what it talks about is, and it's you know, this is the European Union waking up to the fact that the European Union is no longer a social Europe, that the austerity agenda that the European Union has pursued for, we could debate for how long, but certainly since the last economic crisis, that has actually led to growing income inequality, to disparities across all ranges of measures of well-being. But also, there is recognition now in the European Union that if you try to take out unions, you're taking out a very significant bulwark against populist politics and the rise of the far right. All of these are the contexts literally written into the directive for promoting trade unions now. There's been a full switch over from dismantling collective bargaining mechanisms to now promoting collective bargaining mechanisms. And so what the directive requires the Irish state to do is to promote collective bargaining between trade unions and employer representative bodies. There's a target there of that about 80% of workers in a labour market should be covered by collective bargaining coverage. Currently, that number in Ireland is 34%, so we have a long way to go. The directive talks about it being really difficult for workers to form and organise unions and have them recognised in the current climate. And it attributes union busting. It says that union busting is one of the main reasons why workers are finding it so difficult to unionise. And it requires states to introduce all sorts of protections against union busting. So the protection really of the kind of people we were talking about, Homer, are, you know, shop stewards, workplace representatives, elected leaders, whatever terminology you want to use for it. But to protect those people from being targeted for their union activity. And what we want to see in the trade union movement, in the Respect at Work campaign, joined by MAVE's union of secondary school students, joined recently by the third level students union, we want to see the strongest possible transposition of that directive in Ireland. And the reason why we're campaigning for it, Rory, is we're really, really worried that the Irish government will not transpose it strongly, will do a watered-down, you know, Irish version of it, because there is a history of watering down workers' rights directives from the European Union. And also, we're very concerned at some documents that we've seen from the state saying that the view of the Department of Enterprise, Trade and Employment as reported into a joint to an Oireachtas committee, is that they don't think that there's a need for any new legislation at all in Ireland to help workers to organise around the right to organise or protections about organising a union. So what we're forming really in the right the Respect at Work campaign is a broad movement, and of course it is first and foremost going to be a movement of people in unions. But what we want to do with this Respect at Work campaign is to say that unions are open for business for workers that aren't in unions yet, but also people who support us. We want people who support just the notion of unions and collective bargaining to sign up to the campaign and to take action in the campaign. And people can sign up at the website respectatwork.ie.
Very good. Thanks, Ethel, for that. And you can absolutely be sure that if I get elected as MEP, I will 100% push as hard as I can on that directive to make sure it's implemented
We'll hold you to account on that if you do get elected, Rory.
Well, there you go. I'm saying it publicly that you can't. It'll be like that Father Ted one where you play it back. Look what you said. Look. Maeve, just to bring you in on a wider thing, I wanted to talk about two things, actually, wider social issues. The first, what is going on in Wicklow and Newtown and Kennedy at the moment. And secondly, on Palestine and the role of trade unions in both of those. Do you think that there's a role? I think for all of us, in terms of countering the rise of the far right and this anti-immigrant sentiment, and what role do you think trade unions have within that?
I think the role of trade unions in that is absolutely huge. Like, we've seen trade unions be at the forefront of so many movements for social change in Ireland, as well as improving workplace pay and conditions, leading out on campaigns around marriage equality, repeal, gender equality issues. And I think something that's kind of been important for me as a member of a trade union, I'm a member of SIP2, is that when you're in a trade union, you're not on your own. You're part of something. You have a community of people looking out for you and coming together. And for me, particularly as a very young person, I definitely got a lot of mentorship from trade union leaders who took an interest in me as a young person and wanted to help me with my goals. And I think being in a trade union and bringing people together kind of is a huge part of eradicating this huge epidemic of loneliness that we're seeing. And this kind of loneliness and turning to the internet is a huge part of this leaning towards the far right and getting sucked into very harmful ideologies. And if you're in a trade union, you're surrounded by people who want to do social good, you're less likely to fall down that wormhole of the far right and everything together. Because when you're in a trade union, it's you, your colleagues, all the workers around you, migrant workers, men, women, disabled workers, everyone in between coming together and fighting for a common good. And you see your fellow human as a fellow advocate for change and for a better Ireland. And I think that's a huge part of it. If you're part of your union, you're never going to feel alone and you're less likely to get sucked into this horrible wormhole of far-right activity and misinformation, that you're kind of listening to people and connecting with people rather than, you know, becoming bitter about the way things are. And a lot of people are getting sucked down into this wormhole because they believe that by being horrible to refugees and migrants and having bad social attitudes is going to be the way to improve our country, rather than coming together and fighting for things to be better by coming together. I think that is a huge element about it. And, you know, I think it's the only way we've ever changed things here in Ireland, is by coming together. And, you know, if things are changing in our country, we need to make sure there's no conversation about us without us. And the only way to do that is to be together in an official representative capacity through our unions.
Yeah, absolutely. Ethel, your view on that?
Oh, my view is unequivocal on this, Rory. The trade unions have a critical, crucial role in combating the rise of the far right. And I think that the Irish trade union movement has a really strong track record on this and a really strong commitment. And actually, in a way, it's got something to do with our own history in this country. So, yeah, so what I was saying is the critical thing about Ireland is that the Irish trade union movement is kind of unusual in that it has confronted sectarianism in workplaces, in communities for decades, in fact, really since the establishment of the Irish trade union movement. And we really have this very strong tradition in Ireland of organising workers together in a workplace, regardless of their nationality, ethnic identity, communities they come from. And I think we bring that now and that tradition into the moment we're in with the emergence of the far right. In another thing I think we bring is being really clear, steadfast and unequivocal that we have no tolerance for racism or xenophobia or anti-migrant sentiment or activity or politics, or indeed discriminatory sentiment, activity or politics in our workplaces. But I think the unique thing that the trade union movement can do and should do is to say that when somebody comes to Ireland to live here, for whatever reason, they come because they have an employment permit, they come seeking employment, or they come seeking refuge, that they are welcome in the trade union movement, and that the trade union movement will sign them up to our unions to get the same wages and conditions as the Irish people who are doing the same work. Not to be treated better, but to be treated the same, and to be integrated into our unions and to participate in our unions. That's the single most important thing that we can do. And that participatory piece is so important. I see that in my own union. One in five members of SIP2 was not born on the island of Ireland. We have an incredibly diverse membership now, which raises issues around language and communication and culture. Mm. But we see those as opportunities to become more diverse and to become stronger. But on the participation, it's so important that where we do have migrant members in our unions, that they are encouraged to participate to the same level as Irish people, and that they are encouraged to make their ways through our representative structures. Maeve said, nothing about us without us. That's really important for migrant people in unions. And we need to see migrant people getting into positions of leadership, being elected onto executives of unions, representing unions in the media. And we do a lot of that work now in SIP2. This year, we are celebrating the 10th anniversary of our Migrant Worker Leadership Development Programme, where if somebody is migrant, they get elected as a shop steward, we do intensive leadership development with them then to try to ensure that they move up through the ranks of the union. And another critical piece, I was at a conference the other day on anti-racism in trade unions, and we were all saying that unions do a lot of structured education. You know, we have colleges, we have training programs. We also do a lot of informal political work, consciousness raising, awareness raising. And it is a very important contribution of trade unions that if a shop steward or a trade union official does encounter in a workplace a move towards disinformation or some sort of disunity amongst workers, or what is actually happening across unions now, hearing that members of unions are actually getting sucked into the protest movements around asylum seekers in communities, that we are confronting that and saying that is not a trade union value. A trade union value is equality, fairness, justice. And we also take people through that when Irish people emigrated for work to America, Australia, England, they were welcomed into the union movement. They were entitled to the same pay and conditions. And in fact, loads of the great leaders of unions across the world are, you know, Sean O'Brien or Mick Lynch or Irish people rose through the ranks of the unions in other countries. And we want that same opportunity for migrant people here. So absolutely. I think we're really unequivocal about this, Rory. And, you know, you were talking earlier.
I just want to give Maeve a chance to come back in as well. Do you want to?
Yeah, just to build on what Ethel is saying, that when you're in a union and you're coming together and you're receiving information about your fellow workers, whether they're migrants or whether it's their accessibility as a disabled worker in the workplace or respecting them as an LGBTQ worker, that when you're getting this information coming together, it can also be on more basic things like health and safety. By having unions in the workplace, you're not just having respect at work for those union leaders, but you're also creating respect for work, because these union leaders are, you know, educating their rights, the legal procedures in place, so that we're creating safer and better workplaces by union leaders ensuring that the safety of workers comes first and that standards and procedures are upheld, so that we're creating a better place for people to work. And that's not only for workers, but also for businesses, that their workplaces are safe and run well. And a lot of that can be attributed to trade union leaders in workplaces. And, you know, trade union leaders in workplaces as well can be that source of information, that sort of guidance, bringing people together and ensuring that there is no kind of tension within a workplace, that everyone's coming together, regardless of their background. And the trade union movement is leading out on this and making sure that workers are understanding each other and are, you know, not falling down the pipeline of disinformation. And, you know, I think a huge part of that has been educating workers on what's going on in Palestine, for example, and drawing attention to that rather than, you know, just saying, oh, well, we'll leave that to the social movement. It's like trade unionism is the social movement, and we will ensure everyone around us understands what's happening in Palestine and in other places around the world where people are under attack, experiencing genocide.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we look historically, in terms of the origins of trade unions, was actually uniting, you know, different groups within of workers around the common aims, you know, back to, you know, the 19th century, and trying to overcome ethnic divisions and, you know, different backgrounds. And that's the history of in our own country, as you say, and internationally, because we know that divided, that is the whole, you know, behind all of this. You know, where is the far right coming from? It's coming from social media. Where is that coming from? It's the billionaires, it's Musk. They want, and particularly the anti-climate agenda, but also the anti, you know, people who are trying to justify the billionaires and Trump and all that. Behind it all, that rise, it's to try and divide working people who have been so screwed over and who are losing. And we see it in Ireland in terms of housing, in particular, the way that's been whipped up. And I do really feel that, It is trade unions, it is political parties, it's tenants unions. We need to come together and really you talk to people who are getting sucked into this, but unite them as well around, say, look, we, you know, been pulled into this, you know, far right stuff is not going to solve any of your issues. That what will solve them is us working together in trade unions, campaigning for proper investment in housing, healthcare, fighting together. Because I am really genuinely worried about where this is going and what it's doing to Irish society and what it will do to Irish society. And of course, it will mean, you know, it'll mean harsher conditions for workers, more hammering of trade unions if the far right grow. And I think we need to realise this. And I'm not quite sure immediately how to respond to what's going on in Wicklow, but I think we need to respond. Yeah, Ethel.
Yeah, I just want to say something about the misperception, I think, of the far right, because sometimes those politics do engage with the issues that are important to people, like housing. Like sometimes even job quality. And when politics and unions and civil society leave a vacuum, the far right can move in there and offer what seems like credible solutions to people. Yeah. But just on workers' rights, Rory, I want to convey to people that the far-right groupings in the European Parliament consistently vote for business. They consistently vote in favour of the billionaire class. They consistently vote for the 1%, and they consistently vote against workers' interests, ordinary people's interests, and workers' rights. So please don't be sucked in by an everyman popular kind of messaging in the Euro elections, the locals, or the generals. If you're one of those people that thinks that Donald Trump does not represent the interests of working people in America or ordinary people in America, please extend that analysis to the populist politicians who will be coming for your vote in the elections here over the next few months, and realise that in the first instance, they might say popular things about housing or public services or health. But just be warned that when they get into positions in the European Parliament or in our own Parliament, that they will vote against the interests of ordinary people.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's a really important point. Maeve, you want to come in there?
Yeah, and I think part of, you know, the origins of trade unions is that people want to come together to fight the status quo, fight for, you know, just having a day off from the mines rather than being able to live their life to the fullest extent. And I think a lot of these people who are falling out of this pipeline are trying to do the exact same thing. They're trying to fight against status quo and to create something better for themselves, but they're quite simply just falling down into the wrong way of doing it. You know, we're seeing, as you've mentioned, the billionaire class who kind of control social media and algorithms to a certain extent concerning things that young males are being targeted with far-right content and misogynistic content a lot more quickly. It's important that we as people are having these difficult conversations, not only within our relevant parties, NGOs, trade unions, that we're having them at the dinner table, talking to everyone around us and just making sure that they're not kind of falling down this, and kind of bring them back to reality that taking out other groups of people is not the way forward and is not the way we're going to improve things. And that if you want to change the status quo, you need to vote for people who genuinely will fight for workers, the ordinary person, not the person who's going to uphold CEOs, the billionaires, people who already control things. It has to be a complete change the other way, not continuing further the way that we're already going. We can't expect change by going further into what we already have, by going further right. It's just not going to change anything. But we need to be not letting people go down that way. If that person that you know from your class in school is sharing far-right content, try engage with them and see if you can change their mind. They're probably in an incredibly low place that they've found themselves down a certain hashtag that led them down this way, or that they're consuming the wrong content. connect with them on a human level, it's probably the only way you'll get through to someone. I know there's kind of an attitude of lead them off. There's no change in their mind. Sure, they're stubborn as a mule. Don't accept that. Talk to people. Don't let them go further down this.
Yeah, Maeve, listen, very well said. And we've gone way over time, but I really think they were important. And I wanted to give you the opportunity to, you know, take the time and explain it, because I think it's a very, very fundamental approach and ideas that you've set out here and we've discussed today. I think in terms of trying to think how we fix the broken social contract in Ireland, trade unions are at the heart, and that collective approach. And I think, Maeve, that you're really absolutely right there in terms of seeing the common humanity in all of us, and as much as possible to avoid labelling and trying to engage people. But importantly, as we've set out, bring people together to fight for better conditions and fight positively. And I was just at a meeting down in Drogheda last night over the issues of dereliction and vacancy. And it was an incredible public meeting, positive, people wanting to do something, wanting to come together. And I think we need to find those things. And again, trade unions should be at the heart of that. And secondary school students unions as well, third level unions, you know, tenants unions, CATU as well, and lots of other campaigns, you know, and the most important thing is get active, and we can do it. Ethel, you want to get the last word? How could you not?
No, just really briefly, I want to give a plug to something that I think is fantastic that the primary school teachers union is doing.
Yeah.
For Trade Union Week this year, first week in May, they're introducing new lesson plans for kids in fifth class and sixth class in the south, and kids in year 7 and 8 in the north, on unions, on the history of unions, why unions are important, union leaders, unions today. And they have this kind of role play of negotiating. That's like, your podcast is all about solutions, Rory, which I really admire. And there's the teachers union bringing an idea of collectivism and forming solutions to very young kids, you know. So I just think that's great and worth a mention.
Brilliant. Yeah. And it is Trade Union Week this week when this podcast is going out, and there's lots of things going on that people can check out on the Irish Congress of Trade Union website and SIPTU website. Check them out and get involved. And I also, we want to talk, not going to talk, unfortunately, we don't have time today, but we have talked about it. And there's lots of, you know, amazing coverage of Palestine on the Echo Chamber by Tony. And again, it is just so horrific what is going on. But trade unions have a really important, and have been playing a really important role in the solidarity movement, and in particularly growing around the boycott, divestment campaigns. And I just wanted to highlight that there is a number of events going on around that, or been organised by different groups supporting Palestine. Teachers for Palestine, for example, you can go check them out on Instagram, Teachers for Palestine. They're doing incredible work around, again, similar in the classroom and also among teachers, about what people can do in terms of solidarity. And there is an alternative Eurovision on an event down in Galway, and in one in Ballymun, and I'm looking to get the exact dates. You might be able to help me out, Maeve. I don't know if you have them to hand, but they are a number of basically alternative, because of course we shouldn't be going over to the Eurovision and partaking in it, along with many other things we shouldn't be doing. So the event in Galway, just to let people know, is May 10th at 7:30 p.m. and I think it's the same time in Ballymun, and there's a huge lineup of artists. That's May 10th on in Leisureland in Galway. Maeve, you want to come in?
Or was that, and you can look out for a number of independent alternative Eurovision events that are just taking place throughout May 10th and 11th. The biggest one is going to be in Galway, but look at your local IAPSE groups to see what they're doing around it. And if you don't mind me saying, just, if you are a person listening to this podcast and you want to be part of this campaign or want to know more about unions, you can go to respect.work.ie to join the campaign. If you aren't sure what trade union you're meant to be in, you can go to the Irish Congress of Trade Unions website and you can fill in the form. I'll tell you what union to be in. And if you're a young worker in second level, you can check out iscu.ie/young worker. That'll tell you all the information you need to know about your rights at work and how to join a trade union.
Great. Thank you so much, Maeve. Thank you so much, Ethel, for your time. And listen, as always, thank you to our listeners for joining us on this journey along the Our Podcast of Hope. And I think there was a lot there in terms of things that we can do and do together. And as always, we are an independent podcast produced by Tony Groves of Tortoise Shack Media. If you can support us, go over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack and you get the podcasts first. And you get them before they go out everywhere else. And you also get access to other podcasts that don't go out. But listen, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Please share it around. Please get involved. And we will talk to you all very, very soon.